This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And joining us us is a man who doesn't need a whole lot of introduction, but we'll give him one anyway.
We're going to overdo it anyway. He's been called the fastest man in the world here. He did a world record skydive. How many feet was that? 128,000?
27,000 feet.
27,000
feet. Give or take, you know, but who's counting?
Yeah, must have been a heck of a yardstick. It's Felix Baumgartner. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm so happy to be here. It's my first time here in Oshkosh.
Oh, my. That's an experience unto itself.
Yeah. I mean, just when you arrive, you see all those planes and people hanging around.
We have a term for it. It's called aluminum overload.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is. That was it. It's really interesting, you know, because that level of quality that you offer here, the safety program, you know, because there's just so many planes, so many things going on, and it's really interesting to watch.
Now, I have a question for you. What possessed you to want to jump out of anything that high?
Well, you know, I started as a skydiver when I was 16. It was my childhood dream. And, of course, when you're in the sport for so long, you're always trying to push the envelope, you know. And I read about Joe Kittinger. It's the guy back in the 60s
right. Who
did something very similar as kind of an Air Force program. And, you know, at the very beginning, of course, you're not at that level. You know, you do not have the skills. You don't have the fundings and everything. But of all those years doing a lot of stuff, I was a base jumper before. You know, I broke a lot of...
That's kind of the opposite end of the spectrum, though.
Oh, yeah. So I was skydiving a lot. I was trying to build up my skills and everything. And after so many years of skydiving, you finally reach that point where you think... Why should it not be me to break the speed of sound? Because it has never been done before.
Okay. But then you realized somewhere along the line that this is very technically challenging and I'm going to need an awful lot of help.
That's exactly right. You know, the thing is, as a base jumper, it's a very easy relationship. It's you, your parachute, and your decision making, you know. It's kind of an easy relationship. But as if you want to break the speed of sound, you need a lot of scientists. You need a lot of support, you know. You need top level people in the field. And to be honest, we totally underestimated the size of the program, because originally we thought it's going to take 2 years. You know, we buy a balloon, we build the suit, we test a little bit, but then the more you go into details, the more you figure out how difficult it is. You know, just bureaucracy, for example.
Well, yeah.
The capsule needs to be certified because it's going to space. You know, it's kind of an aircraft. And the FAA had papers for an unmanned operation, so a capsule with no people, no humans in it, and they had papers for a manned operation. But in my case, it's a manned operation first, and once I step out, you know, it becomes an unmanned operation. So they had no papers for that. So it took us almost a year to get the capsule certified.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's something that you can never anticipate.
Right, right. And it's something that you never know when it's going to be over.
No, you just keep walking, you know, until you cross the finish line.
Wow. Now, did you guys recover the capsule?
Yeah.
Okay.
Capsule was hanging on a balloon, a helium balloon, pretty big one, you know. And once I was on the ground, they sent a 6-digit code up to the release system. Yeah, it releases the capsule. It comes down on a parachute. It's kind of a reefed parachute. It does not open up to its full size.
Right.
In the beginning, the reason why is because if I have to remain in the capsule, you know, we do not want to wait 45 minutes until the capsule reaches the ground with all the doctors and stuff. You know, that's why we reef that parachute. It comes down fairly fast.
So reefing system allows a gradual opening of the parachute
exactly
over time.
Right. And then it lands on a parachute.
Okay.
It's in the Smithsonian now, together with the suit and everything. So we're super proud about that.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, it's the best place to store the capsule. Cool.
So what happened to the helium balloon after you cut the capsule loose?
There's a system that rips off the balloon, so all the helium disappears and also comes down. So
okay.
That's a huge piece of plastic.
So it's not left up there for birds to eat?
It's not floating there.
Well, I would think that, I mean, with the case of weather balloons, they eventually burst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
They're going higher and higher until
the pressure's too much.
That was also a big issue on my jump. You know, how high are we going to go until the balloon bursts? Because I was already up to 130 something, you know, but then the guy on the ground who was responsible for the balloon, he looked at the surface of the balloon and he could tell there's so much tension on it, so we had to go down a little bit lower just to play it safe.
Huh,
because if that balloon bursts, you know, it's going to end up in a total disaster.
Oh my God, yeah.
Oh yeah.
You're going to start tumbling and you're going to get tangled up and everything.
You're not getting outside the capsule.
Right.
The parachute's not going to open, so.
Yeah.
Oh boy. That would not have ended
well. I'm really
glad
that didn't happen.
Me too.
When you left the capsule and stood out on the little platform and then finally jumped off, how long did you free fall?
Free fall was somewhere around 4 minutes.
4 minutes of straight falling down.
When you think about it, that's not that long. I mean, it probably felt like an eternity while you were falling.
That's actually right. You know, I mean, in the beginning, you accelerate so fast that after 55 seconds, you reach supersonic speed. That was still accelerating to Mach 1.25.
Wow.
You have no sensation of that, though.
That's the thing. You know, people always ask me, how did you feel? But, you know, there is nothing around.
Right. There's no air.
There's no reference point. There's no air. The suit is not flapping. There's no noise. So you have
and
absolutely
by that
no
token,
indication.
You also cannot control the suit's attitude.
In the beginning. It's,
right,
it's,
right.
There's
you're
no
gonna,
air. It's
right, you're tumbling,
vacuum.
You're whatever.
Yeah.
So you're weightless at that point.
You're not weightless. There's still a lot of gravity, almost the same gravity like it's here on the ground.
But once, once you're falling, though, and you're ballistic, more or less, you still feel that gravity pulling on you or not?
No, you do.
Okay.
You do. You just don't realize how fast you travel.
Right.
And the thing is, you know, you have to get off really clean. Do not tumble in the beginning, and then you're rotating the whole way down because there's no air that you can use to stop the tumble.
Exactly.
It's also not accelerating, but at a certain point, at around 90,000 feet, you hit a thicker air layer, and it comes in very progressive. You can feel it, you know. And if you're in the wrong position and you're already tumbling super fast,
boy.
You know, it ramps up so fast that at a certain point, all the blood goes in your skull.
Right.
And at a certain RPM, the blood has only one way to leave your skull. It's throughout the eyeballs. That means you're going to die.
So, yeah. So how much training did you actually have to go through before you went and did this jump?
Well, actually, the main thing was we wanted to play it really safe. Yeah. We're not guys like going from zero to hero. We did a lot of testing on the ground. We did a lot of testing in a wind tunnel to get used to that pressurized suit, because you have to keep in mind as a skydiver, you're super flexible, you're mobile, you know. And once you're in that suit and it's pressurized, it's very heavy. You have a huge chest bag in front, you know, you have a helmet, you cannot move your head up. One thing that you do all the time in a parachute opens, you look up to make sure if it's fully open, you know. You cannot do this in a pressure suit. That's why I had mirrors on my hand gloves.
Oh, so
to look in the mirror to see if the parachute is open.
Huh,
so
never would have thought of that.
The whole suit is like a handicap, and nothing is natural anymore. So all those years, I've been skydiving for 25 years, but skydiving in a spacesuit that's pressurized is a complete different game.
Now, I had read that you had some issues with claustrophobia inside the suit. Was that something you anticipated, or is it just popped up when you tried it on?
Well, normally I'm not claustrophobic. I never had any issues, you know, but the pressure suit is something really weird because, you know, when you lock your visor, because every time before I went up, I had to breathe 100% oxygen. That means they put you in the suit, they lock up everything, and then for 2 hours straight, you're breathing 100% oxygen to get rid of all the nitrogen bubbles in your blood system.
Oh.
Everybody does this. All those SR-71 right. pilots, the U-2 pilots, we're all sitting in the same room, breathing in that suit. And if you're not used to that suit, you know, you're completely locked away from the outside world. You're sitting there, you can see all your buddies, you can see their mouses are moving, but you don't hear anything. It's uncomfortable inside the suit. It's hard to breathe because it always feels like you're breathing through a pillow.
And you know, your brain's saying there's nothing wrong, but the other's saying that irrational fear grips you.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So the interesting part is that we thought about everything, you know, but nobody thought that Felix Baumgartner, who did all those base jumps and all those high-profile skydives, is having a problem on the ground in a spacesuit.
And I'm sure that thought ran through your head. You're like, what's wrong with me? Why does this bother me? Why does this scare me so much?
The biggest problem was that I did never address it to my team, you know. Are you sitting in the suit, you're looking at everybody around, and you know you cannot handle the suit, but they put me on such a pedestal. You know,
right.
Felix Baumgartner did all those base jumps and stuff, so he doesn't have fear at all. Now he's sitting on the ground in a suit, and you're like, should I tell somebody? And then like, nah, then maybe next time it's getting better. But it never did.
Right, right.
So I needed help.
Well, that's okay. That's what you had your team for, was support.
Yeah. How did you approach getting funding? Yeah, it was done, but it was all Air Force done, so they paid the bills. Now you're trying to pay for this on your own.
No, I was working with Red Bull for so many years, since almost the beginning when Red Bull started in Austria.
Okay.
So we have a really, really good relationship, and over all those years, you know, we developed trust each other, you know, we did a lot of stuff together. It was always successful. That's why they always also supported me on Red Bull Stratos.
Okay, so when you pitched the idea, they're like, yeah, let's do it.
Well, it was not exactly like this. It was more like, okay, we have to make sure we're competent in that field, you know, because Red Bull is doing energy drinks, you know, and we want to make sure that people also accept that we're taking on that challenge, you know. That's the reason why we brought Joe Kittinger on board.
Right.
Because we really wanted some qualified people with a history in that field.
Yeah, there's not many of those around.
No, not at all.
Those around, you know.
But you know, you talk about Red Bull as a partner, and they want to make sure that this works well for them, and they go out there and they do the Red Bull Flugtag. They had the airplane races. Yeah, but it's a riot to watch this stuff.
Oh yeah,
Red Bull is very much out there in the public eye, so you can understand.
I want to know if you've been introduced to Yves Rossi and are looking at taking a flight on one of his wings.
No, I met him once. Yeah, but he's flying. I think he's flying for Breitling.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He's not Red Bull. He's Breitling. Darn.
Yeah, him and
he's a cool guy. He's an airliner.
Yeah,
yeah. I like the idea because, you know, that wing, I was also building a carbon fiber wing, and I flew across the English Channel.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But I'm powered, you know. But I like the idea that you can finally climb, because with one wing it was a gliding flight.
Right.
Firmly going down all the way, but he can actually climb altitude.
Yeah, and not only that, but they're able to roll it, yep, too. So I've seen that. They joined up, there's a video with the, yep, A380 they joined, yep, up with, and it was two of them too, which, yep, was phenomenal.
It was one of our guys.
Oh, really? Yeah. Nice.
You have you retired from skydiving?
Not completely. I still do a skydive once in a while, but, you know, I had two dreams when I was a kid. It was skydiving and helicopter flying, but I could never afford to take helicopter lessons. But in 2006, I made enough money, so I went to LA, Van Nuys, and did my private pilot license there. A couple years later, I did my commercial license, and now I'm working on aerobatic helicopter flying for Red Bull.
Oh, nice.
You're following in Chuck Aaron's footsteps.
Yeah, right.
He's a crazy man.
He is, yeah.
No, he's not. Just like he said, if it's 50-50, he's not going to do it.
Yeah, so that's exactly right.
They've done the whole risk analysis on that flying.
Yep.
No, but this year we brought Rainer Wilke. He's a German guy, and he's the one who invented everything. He was a teacher of me. He was a teacher of Aaron Fitzgerald. He was the teacher of Blackie. He's the other guy from Austria. And he was also the teacher of Chuck Aaron. So tomorrow and today, you're going to see Rainer Wilke with a super cool aerobatic program. And you really have to watch it, because it's a total different level. It's the University of Aerobatic Helicopter Flying.
Interesting. Interesting.
That sounds like fun.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us, Felix. This has been a blast.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Felix Baumgartner, and I'm Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie, and this is EAA Radio.